All right, welcome back. Who's talking? Frank and Jim and Chris Sill. And we're going to go immediately now to our next guest, VAF Executive Director and former basketball player, Dirk Kuemstra. Dirk, are you with us? We got to hit the button again. We've had technology issues here with the phone buttons. Dirk, are you there?
I'm here.
All right. Dirk, thanks for taking a moment and joining us tonight. As I say, VAF Executive Director. And you've been in that position how long now?
The current position since April of 96.
Okay.
Wow.
A wow, yeah.
That gets a wow.
That's a 16 years, even in my math, or getting pretty close to it. But and speaking of the VAF, I know you've added some staff folks here recently. Why don't you maybe bring us up to date on that activity?
Yeah, we've been adding a few positions to our team. We know that Craig always has new targets for us to hit, and we felt that we needed to add some staff to better serve the donors and also go out and try to raise a little bit more money for Craig and the athletic department. So we've actually added three positions, two of whom are former Cavalier athletes, Chelsea Shine for the women's basketball team, Jim Harshaw, a former wrestler, and then we hired a young man named Dylan Boggs who came from University of Kentucky. So we've added some good talent to our team.
Dirk, this is Frank. Like to hear your thoughts on how things are going with the new indoor training facility, which was recently confirmed, I believe, that it's going to be named in honor of Coach George Welsh.
Yes, the Board of Visitors officially approved that a couple of weeks ago. I'm not sure it was a very well-kept secret. Everybody knew that it was going down that track. We sent out our announcement and the brochure announcing the George Welsh naming, as well as our grassroots solicitation effort. We're about $2 million left to raise on the facility, $13 million facility, trying to get everything finished by the end of this calendar year, because if you've driven by University Hall and looked to the practice fields behind it, it is going up extremely fast.
Looks like an airplane hangar. It's so big.
It's big enough to kick in. Our other field sports will use it, lacrosse and field hockey and others in inclement weather in the wintertime. It'll just be a great addition to our athletic program. But obviously, and the focus of it being making the indoor training space for our football team. And, I can't think of a better person to name the facility for than George Welsh and what he stood for and how he built the program. Obviously, he loved the practice field and preparing the players for Saturday. And that's just, in my opinion, the perfect fitting tribute to the legend that he is.
Yeah, Dirk, absolutely.
Yeah, clarify again, when will it be available for use? At the end of this year, next fall, or when?
The construction timeline is to have everything finished by February of 2013.
Okay, so, potentially, could the football team use it as early as spring practice then?
They will use it in the spring, and we started construction, obviously, before we had all of the money raised. We took a leap of faith that we could get the money raised. We just didn't feel like we could delay having that as a recruiting tool and a developmental tool for Mike and his program. So we got the lead gift of $5 million that really kicked off our fundraising effort. And then we've been hot and heavy on the fundraising trail, soliciting as many people for the high-end gifts that we could, and knowing that we also wanted to offer it out to those who wanted to get behind the George Welsh name on it. And that's why we released our grassroots effort earlier in the fall that would give people an opportunity to make a contribution and recognize George in that way.
In the unofficial arms race that is going on today in college sports, I think it's awesome that Virginia jumped ahead on this particular facility. And I commend you and your staff and everybody at UVA for biting the bullet and going after this hard, because I think it's really going to help UVA not only with football but all the Olympic sports as well.
Yeah, I think Craig Littlepage, John Oliver, obviously is the key piece in developing our facility plan. We probably won't ever have the biggest, the nicest, the wow factor, but we want to do what's right for our university and in our situation, and we believe that this is a really good project for us. It'll give us what we need. It's what Mike wanted, and we're continuing to evaluate. We know it's somewhat of an arms race. We're not trying to be in the arms race as much as we are trying to provide our coaches and our student athletes with the tools that they need, to be able to develop and win on the field and keep everything in the proper context. And when we can do things at our main arenas and facilities where the fans can benefit from that. Obviously, we want to keep that top of mind as well.
Yeah, Dirk, the indoor facility is a special capital project. Bring our listeners up to date with the annual campaign, where you stand, how many donors, and so forth, because I know that's a calendar year campaign.
Yeah, that continues to be our bread and butter fundraising effort because there's a heavy reliance upon that annual fund to fund scholarships, fund academic advising, fund a portion of our operational budget for our Olympic sports. And so we've been tracking that pretty closely and really need that to ramp up and expand. And we're tracking a little ahead of where we were at this time last year. Our goal being $14.5 million. We're at about $13.2 million, and we're tracking toward hopefully finish all of this gap and close the gap by the end of the calendar year. But it's going to be a tight race to the end. You know, a number of people wait till the end of the year to make their contributions for tax reasons. So we're trying to work with all those donors and anybody that wants to increase their gift before the end of the year that they've already made that commitment. We'll certainly take that too, because it's going to take every dollar, you know, we can go out and raise to provide the scholarship support that we need for the year.
Well, Dirk, we certainly commend you and your staff and everyone there in the athletic department as well. Always doing a great job for the university. I guess one question that might come to mind a little bit is with what you're seeing, and you've been a part of this, the whole, NCAA efforts over these last couple of decades. What trends are you spotting that might surprise our listeners a little bit in terms of what you've seen, particularly in maybe the last 5 to 10 years?
No, I think the biggest thing that all of us are wrestling with in college athletics is the impact of TV on fans' interest in following the program, because you can stay at home watching on your big screen TV, and obviously we want and need fans in the stands, and the ticket revenue and the contribution revenue that's associated with that is extremely important to funding our program. And that's something that we're all wrestling with in the college sports industry, and we know that people, you know, want to support the program, and a lot of times they associate the contribution to gain access to good tickets as the only means or reason to give. And we're trying to do all that we can to articulate the real impact that contributions have on the experience that our student athletes have. And I would argue that we probably have some of the very best, if not the best, student athletes in the country at the university. And the experience that they have and what our donors provide for that goes well beyond that contribution to get a ticket or a parking space. And so you wrap all that together with the impact of TV and everything being available on high definition whenever you want to watch it in your home. You know, that's a changing in the industry that we're all trying to figure out how to best wrap our arms around, because it's such a critical component to how we operate.
Well, we've had great student athletes in the past with Dirk Kastra and Jim Hobgood. I mean, I don't think it gets any better than that.
You know. And don't forget Antonio Rice.
Antonio Rice, that's right. But at any rate, Dirk, we always thank you for taking a few minutes to join us. We'll let you get back and enjoy the rest of your evening, and we'll have you back before long.
All right, well, I appreciate you all letting me come on the show and talk a little Virginia sports, and we appreciate what you're doing there in Richmond.
Absolutely. Dirk Kastra, VAF Executive Director, joining us for a couple of minutes, and I think right now we are going to go to our segment brought to you by our friends at LeClaire Ryan. It's called the LeClaire Ryan Play of the Game, and I think it's from the football game Saturday.
Well, it was a difficult decision, but we've selected the play or sequence of plays that clearly most fans that stayed in Scott Stadium probably are still scratching their heads about a little bit. Late in the contest, UVA had rallied and was only down by 6 points. Virginia kicked off. Louisiana Tech moved the ball on first down to approximately the 33-34-yard line and was sitting at 2nd and 1.5 or 2nd and 2. They ran a running play. They got maybe a yard. Then they, on third down, they tried to draw Virginia off sides. They end up running the ball. They did not get the first down, so it was 4th and 1. And that's when things got a little dicey, a little weird, and a little bit of the twilight zone, if you ask me. I'm not sure if the referees got it right or not. I certainly sensed, although I wasn't counting, it appeared that Louisiana Tech had more than 11 men on their field, because they had people on their sideline stepping onto the field, and it was like a cat-and-mouse game. Virginia sent out the punt return or punt block unit, And clearly, Kalik Shepard ran out there as the solo return man, and somehow the ball wasn't being snapped, and the other team really wasn't making an effort. But there were clearly some movement on their sideline, and I'd have to go back and look at a replay. But it seemed to me that the whole game came down to right there.
So the play of the game was a penalty?
Well, it turned out to be a 12-man on the field penalty against Virginia. The Virginia coaches were furious. Coach London chased the head referee off the field. I would have to say it was one of the more bizarre endings I've ever seen to a football game.
Yeah, you always hate to have a flag determine. I know that's true in basketball. You hate to have a whistle determine the outcome of a game. But at any rate, that's the way it was. I think we got the doctor on the line now. If you want to introduce him, we can go ahead and move on to the injury report.
We are pleased tonight to have Ortho Virginia's Dr. David Nediff on the line with us tonight. Dr. Nediff has been working at Ortho Virginia for years. He's worked with a lot of athletes and dealing with their sports injuries. And without further ado, let's bring on Dr. Nediff. Are you there, sir?
Guys, how are you?
Hey, good evening. Thank you for joining us. You've been with us, I think, every year we've had the show. I think we've had the pleasure of you joining us. Quickly, Billy Shouts was seen on crutches. He's Virginia's senior defensive end. Perry Jones, a running back, had a bruised knee, but he played the whole game as if he was possessed. Played very well. Leroy Reynolds had hand surgery, I believe, right after the Georgia Tech game, and he has not been playing. No status check on where he is right now in that recovery. Tim Smith played, but it looked like his leg is still bothering him, and he actually limped off the field in the fourth quarter. And Coach London today gave us a little bit of information about Clifton Richardson, one of the star running backs who's really waiting for his turn, has had a hamstring problem. And Coach London today, or last night, said that the hamstring is getting better and that he's liable to get back on the field. So the rumor of Clifton Richardson being redshirted this year may go away. So there's the injury report. Anyhow, I don't know if you have any more information through Jody Smith or any of the others. Do you?
I really don't have any more specifics about that. As you know, they're pretty tight with information nowadays, all the privacy laws and everything. So they keep it clamped down pretty good, other than what the coaches will give to the media.
Yeah, I'm not a doctor, but I know crutches is a bad sign.
Yeah, generally they are. Although, you know, it just depends. You know, if it's sometimes you're on crutches just because they're being very cautious with it until they really get a good look. Orthopedic guys up there really get a good look. Sometimes the trainers will just put them on crutches initially till they get a definitive answer, a definitive MRI, something like that.
I think somebody the other day told us, one of your colleagues said lower leg could mean ankle, it could mean Achilles tendon, it could mean foot. Is that what you interpret lower leg injury to be?
Yes. I mean, it could be such a number of different things, anywhere from, like you said, the 4 foot all the way up to the top of the shin bone. Typically, it's a ankle-related thing, and I think last year we talked a little bit about the low ankle sprain versus high ankle sprain and how the high ankle sprains take longer to get better. So hopefully it will be something minor where they can get them back in there quicker.
Dr. Nediff, in your experience, particularly in the last 4 or 5 years, what sort of sports injuries are you seeing maybe a little bit more today than maybe you used to see? And with that said, what are you doing to help treat those athletes?
I think the most overwhelming thing that we see now is part of it, and it goes together. You know, these kids nowadays, it's just incredible how big and strong they are at such a young age. So this kind of pulls into the whole violent, the concussion thing. But I saw a kid the other day in my office who was like 8th grade, and he was 6'3", and he was about 250, and he was solid, and he was a muscular kid. It's amazing. So they're getting bigger, faster, stronger. They hit harder. And so we're seeing, for example, I see more ACL injuries now, and part of it is that's my practice, but also, we're seeing them at a younger age because they're going harder and they're just playing at a more competitive level at a really young age. So I see kids who are in 5th grade, 4th grade, tear their ACL.
Mm.
And it's a big problem, you know, because the surgery that we do on a 16-year-old for an ACL is a much better surgery than the surgery we do for a 8-year-old with an ACL injury. So it's really not an ideal situation to have these younger kids with these significant knee injuries, but it's, you know, they're playing and they're going to, and they, unfortunately, it's part of the game.
Are you grafting the patella tendon, or are you using some other ligament or tendon from somewhere else?
Yeah, my kind of go-to graft is from the patellar tendon, and there was a big swing, I think, you know, in the past 20 years to move. A lot of guys were excited about hamstrings and using the hamstring to reconstruct the ACL, and mostly just because of where I trained, it was never really a hamstring popular place, so I've always kind of been a patellar tendon advocate, and I think in the last 5 years, there's been a little pendulum swing back to people, at least in the more elite level athlete, using the patellar tendon graft.
Gotcha.
Yeah, doctor, I don't know about you. I was really impressed by that question from Frank Maloney. He gets a plus one on that. You know,
yeah, I mean,
he's starting to sound like he knows what he's talking about here.
Should call me Dr. Maloney.
I mean, he's not a doctor, but he plays one on the radio, you know. But at any rate,
doctor. I know he's a smart guy.
Say, take that, Hobo.
Well, no, he is. He's a UVA grad. What do you expect? And he actually got in, you know, back in the day without being a scholarship athlete like me. You know, I had a little advantage. But at any rate, Dr. Neediff, we thank you for taking a couple of minutes and joining us again tonight.
No, it's my pleasure. I always enjoy it.
All right, Dr. David Neediff from our friends out at Ortho Virginia, and we're going to take our final break and come back with the Olympic update from Chris and preview next week's show, and we have a special guest next week. So stay with us. We'll be back after these messages.